everyone. This is Mark Movsesian. I'm the director of the Center for Law and Religion at St. John's Law School, and I'm joined once again by my colleague, Mark DiGirolami, who is the associate director of the center. And this is another episode in Legal Spirits, which is our podcast series on cases and issues in law and religion. Well, Happy New Year, Mark. Welcome back.
Thank you. Happy New Year to you, Mark.
And Happy New Year to all the listeners. This will be our first podcast of the year. And today, we're going to discuss an interesting case from the Ninth Circuit on the constitutionality of prayer at local school board meetings. The case is called Freedom from Religious Foundation versus Chino Valley Unified School District, and this was decided by the Ninth Circuit and Bank last month. The panel decision in the case was earlier in the summer. And that panel decision, the Ninth Circuit panel decision held that the practice of prayer at local school board meetings violated the Establishment Clause. In December, the en banc court let the ruling stand. So the case addresses Establishment Clause doctrine with respect to public prayer. But if that were all the case did, it really wouldn't be that interesting because there are lots of cases on public prayer in various contexts. We think the case is interesting because of what it says about the significance of tradition in the Establishment Clause context, and in particular here a statement by Judge O'Scanlan in the en banc court. So that's what we're going to focus on in this podcast.
Yep, that's great. And we'll also talk a little bit about, in more general terms, about the influence of tradition as an interpretive method in constitutional law more generally, and some of the problems or interesting issues that arise when one uses tradition for constitutional interpretation more broadly.
Okay, so let's talk about the facts of the case. The case involves the practice of an opening prayer at school board meetings in Chino Valley, California, which is part of Greater Los Angeles. The board meets about 18 times a year, and its meetings consist of first a closed session, which deals with matters of student discipline and so on, and then an open session, that is, a session that's open to the public. The open session involves administrative decisions on budgets and so on, and also frequently includes student presentations and student awards. And so, of course, students and parents are often present at the school board meetings, and there's also a student representative on the board.
And I just want to say, focus on that fact, listeners, because it seems to be an important one, the fact that a student representative was actually on the board.
Right. So, for several years, each of the board's open sessions has included an opening prayer, which is typically led by clergy from local congregations. And the clergy are selected from a list, which a school board staff member draws up from local phone books, from the internet, and from the local chamber of commerce. Based on the record, at least as the panel describes it, the clergy have been overwhelmingly Christian in identity, and the prayers have been overwhelmingly Christian in context. But we should say that there's nothing untoward about that. That simply represents the demography in the school district.
Yeah, one additional little fact that is of interest is that the practice itself is only a few years old. I think it started in 2010, Mark, and then the complaint from the Freedom from Religion Foundation came in only about 3 or 4 years later.
Right. No, it is a fairly recent practice for the school board. So the Freedom from Religion Foundation, along with some students and parents and school district employees, sued the board, arguing that the practice of prayer at meetings violated the Establishment Clause. So in July, the panel of the Ninth Circuit agreed with the plaintiffs and held that prayer at school board meetings violates the Establishment Clause. And now, Mark, you know something about the Ninth Circuit.
Yeah, I clerked for a judge on the Ninth Circuit, Judge Jerome Ferris. He was a senior circuit judge at the time. And so I know a few of the judges there. It's a very large circuit, as we all know. It's got an extremely rich diversity politically, judges who are very, very conservative and judges who are very, very progressive. And in looking at the judges who decided this decision on the panel, by the way, a decision decided per curiam, which I thought was interesting as well.
I thought that was interesting too, Mark. I wasn't sure I understood why.
I'm not sure I understood why either. It doesn't seem to me to be the kind of separation of power sorts of decisions that would require or that would suggest a per curiam decision, but it was. But at any rate, the three judges on the panel, Judge Wardlaw, Judge McEwen, and then a district court judge from Colorado, whom I'm not familiar with, but at least Judges Wardlaw and McEwen are definitely on the progressive side of the political spectrum.
All right, so the panel said that the prayer at school board meetings violated the Constitution, and The first thing the panel said was that this prayer was not within the so-called legislative prayer exception. That is, the exception that's made in Establishment Clause doctrine for the tradition of legislative prayer. And there are two Supreme Court cases on this, Marsh, which comes from the 1980s, and also Town of Greece, which was much more recent, 2014, I think.
Yes, that's right.
So, Mark, let's fill in the background here.
So these decisions, and particularly Town of Greece, establish that when one deals with a practice that is a very long-standing, very old practice, and it's clear that the practice was engaged in, for example, by the people who ratified the Establishment Clause itself, that the court is not going to, under those circumstances, apply one of its usual tests to determine the practice's constitutionality. So it's more abstract or principle-driven tests under those circumstances are not going to apply. Instead, the inquiry really proceeds on the basis of what is traditional and whether the practice at issue is such that its traditional status either makes it constitutional, clearly constitutional, or makes it outside of the tradition, and therefore some of these other tests apply.
Right. So the whole point of the legislative prayer exception is legislative prayer is an American tradition and therefore is treated by the court differently from other aspects of the Establishment Clause.
It's a kind of carve-out, Mark, from what the court usually does when it examines these sorts of practices.
Yeah, that's a good way to put it. And the court in the Ninth Circuit panel in this case said that the prayer at the Chino School Board was not within that exception. Why? Because the court said the prayers at the school board were, I'm quoting now, were not the sort of solemnizing and unifying prayer directed at lawmakers themselves and conducted before an audience of mature adults, free from coercive pressures to participate, that the legislative prayer tradition contemplates. And the court pointed out, for example, that unlike in the legislative prayer situation, there were students often present in the audience. Many of the attendees were adolescents and children, some as young as second grade. And so the court said that changed the situation. That's not the traditional legislative prayer situation. And of course, kids are much more impressionable than adults are. And Mark, you pointed out that there's a representative from the student body right there every time.
I think that's right. I mean, one difference, and we'll talk about this when we talk about Judge O'Scanlan's statement, basically what would otherwise be a dissent, except that Judge O'Scanlan is now senior, but a statement disagreeing with a panel decision, he said, well, look, there's lots of students or young people who attend the town board meetings as well. But I think perhaps one difference, factual difference, salient or not, is that there's actually a student who's on the board in this case where there wasn't in Town of Greece, for example.
Okay, we'll come back to that because I want to point out another thing the panel said about tradition. The panel said that the school board prayer was not within the legislative prayer exception because school board prayers cannot be part of a tradition because the framers knew nothing of school boards.
Yeah, this is a very important point.
Right. The exception is for legislative prayer, with which the framers were very familiar. They had it in the first Congress. But school board prayer, they knew nothing about for the simple reason that public schools, and therefore public school boards, didn't exist at the time of the framing. So therefore, categorically, this was outside the tradition. And because it's outside the tradition, the court applied one of the abstract tests Mark mentioned before, the Lemon test, and said that, you know, the school board loses because this is a violation of Lemon. We're not going to get into that because that's frankly not the most important part of this opinion, I think. Okay, so last month, at the end of December, an en banc Ninth Circuit declined to rehear the case, which means that the panel decision stands for now. The school district has 3 months from December to file a cert petition. You know, you never know what happens. I think the court could grant cert in this case myself because a couple of reasons. One is the Ninth Circuit decision, the panel decision, creates a split with the Fifth Circuit, which recently held that prayers at school board meetings are constitutional. Moreover, eight judges joined this statement by Judge O'Scanlan, which suggests the ruling was quite controversial within the Ninth Circuit itself. So let's focus on Judge O'Scanlan's statement, which I think is really very interesting and which highlights some very important broader themes. And I want to focus especially on what Judge O'Scanlan had to say about whether the school board prayer fits within the American tradition of legislative prayer and therefore within the legislative prayer exception. We should note, Mark, just in the interest of disclosure, that Judge O'Scanlan is a grad of St. John's University. He's a friend of our center. In fact, he spoke at our 2012 conference in Rome on religious symbols. Okay, Mark, why don't you begin?
And furthermore, in fairness, if we noted that Judges Ward and McEwen are on on the left side of the political spectrum on the Ninth Circuit, it's fair also to say that Judge O'Scanlan is one of the more conservative judges on the Ninth Circuit. But on the merits here, what Judge O'Scanlan said is that school boards are within the tradition of legislative prayer.
So disagreed with the panel.
Disagreed with the panel. And he says that the panel's distinction here is, quote unquote, manufactured, that it's manufactured, that the board's function is not educative, but legislative.
So why does he say manufactured, which is, you know, for people who don't follow court speak, those are fighting words. Why does he say it's manufactured?
Well, look, I think what he's trying to say is the panel was looking for a way to find that this particular manifestation of prayer, this prayer practice, was not within the tradition. And why? Because they don't like what the court did in Town of Greece, right? Mm-hmm. They were looking for a way to distinguish this case. And we're going to see that this often happens, actually, when we deal with tradition as a method of interpretation. The question will arise, we'll talk about this later, about exactly how to draw the tradition, whether to draw it narrowly or to draw it broadly.
Okay, so why does he say the function here is legislative, not educative? What's that all about?
Well, because he's saying this school board sits to make decisions about, for example, student discipline, or to make other sorts of decisions about what happens with respect to mechanics of running the school.
Policy matters.
Policy matters. It doesn't exist to teach, for example. It's not, its primary function is not educative. So it's more like, he's saying, it's more analogous to the way in which the town board meetings operate in a case like Town of Greece.
And so why would it make a difference if it were educative and not legislative?
Well, it seems to me that that difference makes a difference if the panel's distinction between the school setting and the legislative setting is a cogent one. And I think the court has, in fact, held in some of its previous cases that when you're dealing with children and you're inside the educational context, look, then different sorts of rules apply when we're trying to evaluate some of these practices like legislative prayer or the display of the Ten Commandments and others.
Yeah, so I think there really are a couple of things going on here. One is he's saying this is legislative because he's trying to fit it within this exception. But there's also a functional difference. And you're right, Mark. The court has said many times that in the educative context, we have to be much more careful about Establishment Clause concerns because there are impressionable students who might well feel coerced to actually join in prayer or assent to certain propositions. And so we have to be very careful. So it's not simply a categorical thing. It's also a functional thing.
I think that's right. And his point, Judge O'Scanlan's point, is there are lots of young people who sit in on these school board meetings,
right,
just as there are lots of young people that might sit in and did sit in on the town board meetings in a case like Town of Greece.
Right. That's an important point because the panel said, look, there are a lot of students present. You've pointed out there's a student representative. And Judge O'Scanlan says, well, so what? That doesn't really distinguish anything, because there are often students present at town board meetings too.
Yes, and now, so that's one point that he made. He made a second point about the significance of tradition in this context. And he said the panel was wrong to focus on the complete absence of school boards at the time of the framing.
Yeah, that's interesting.
That was not the issue. That's not important in constructing or drawing or describing what the tradition is. What did you think about that, Mark?
Well, I mean, it's, you know, what he said is, I'm just going to quote him now. He said, what's required for a legislative prayer practice to be constitutional is not an unbroken historical pattern of the precise practice at issue, which is what the panel said. Yes, the panel said, well, there is a legislative prayer tradition, but this isn't part of the tradition because, after all, we didn't have school boards, and so almost by definition, there can't be a tradition of school board prayer. And what Judge O'Scanlan says is, look, that's not what's important. It's not whether there's a precise tradition that goes back to the time of the framing. Rather, you have to take a broader view. And what's required, I'm quoting again, is for the practice to fit within the tradition long followed. So, you know, we often see this in law, Mark, as you said, in lots of areas. We have a category, and then there's a question about how broadly we define this category.
I think that's right. And that is, it's certainly a difference or a distinction or a problem that happens when you're talking about tradition as an interpretive method. I think it's the question about whether the tradition must include evidence from the founding is an extremely interesting one and perhaps distinguishes in some ways a traditional method from originalism. Originalism, which really depends, at least in its modern formulation, on the original public meaning, the way that the words were understood by the educated or by the plugged-in public at the time that they were enacted. Well, look, I think the panel has something of a point that if the practice itself, if the tradition didn't exist at all at the time of the founding, then how can ordinary members of the public have understood the meaning of the Establishment Clause to apply to something that didn't even exist?
Right. And so now let's get into some of what I personally think makes this case so interesting and Judge O'Scanlan's statement so provocative is, we're talking about what lawyers would understand as a very basic litigation move. You know, how do you define the concept at issue? Do you define it broadly or do you define it narrowly? But of course, behind that debate is a deeper debate about the actual purposes of the Establishment Clause and the purposes of constitutional adjudication more broadly. And here I want to get into a couple of topics. We're not going to have time to talk about all of them. Really, what we're asking here is, why is tradition important? Why should judges ever look at tradition? Because once you answer that question, you'll have a better sense of whether you define the tradition broadly or narrowly.
Well,
it seems to me.
Let me stop you there, Mark, because in identifying these different issues that we have in front of us, that's one issue. One issue is, why should judges look to tradition?
Which, right? I should say, Judge O'Scanlan, he says very briefly, he says, well, tradition is important because it's evidence of the original understanding and the original practice. And, you know, he doesn't have time, of course, to go into a big discussion of why. But that's one reason, he says. It seems to me it's not the only reason you might look at tradition.
Well, that's true. So let me just stop you and say, one issue is the question of the justification of tradition.
Correct.
A second issue is, and from my perspective, perhaps an even more interesting issue is, the extent to which the court actually relies on this kind of method. And I think, and this relates to a paper that I'm writing right now on this subject, in many areas of constitutional interpretation, the court is using this kind of method. It's amazing the material that you can find once you look, and you look across the domains of constitutional interpretation. This method, the combination of looking for a practice, a concrete practice of long age and continuous usage, occurs really throughout the Constitution and is a frequent staple of the court's interpretive methods. That's number one. Number two, the question of how to draw the tradition recurs again and again. And sometimes justices are trying to draw the tradition narrowly, and sometimes they're trying to draw it broadly to advance various other sorts of ends.
Okay, good. So in the interest of time, we'll come back and talk about some of these bigger issues in later podcasts. But in the interest of time, let's just focus on one of them here, the one that divides Judge O'Scanlan and the panel, and that is the definition of this specific tradition. So why don't you talk about that, Mark?
All right. So it seems to me that the panel's moves here are very similar to the approach taken by Justice Kagan in her dissent in Town of Greece, where she also tried to draw the tradition of legislative prayer narrowly. She accepted the legitimacy of the traditional method of interpretation. That actually, all by itself, that was pretty amazing, because in Marsh versus Chambers, the dissenting justices in that case did not accept the method of interpretation of tradition as interpretively salient, where she did. But what she said, she really focused on the nature of the tradition of legislative prayer. She said, the tradition of legislative prayer does not encompass legislative prayers that have too close a connection to Christianity. She says that the town meetings reflect citizen-centered venues rather than legislator-centered venues, which was the issue in Town of Greece. And that the town of Greece didn't make enough of an effort to include non-Christian prayers. So all of those factors, she said, that takes it outside of the protective, what she called the protective ambit of the Marsh tradition.
Well, as you say, that's sort of what the panel was doing here. They were attempting to also draw the lines around the tradition pretty strictly in order, I think it's fair, as you say, in order to limit the legislative prayer exception.
Yeah, right, because they didn't like it. They don't like that particular outcome. But notice the disagreement with O'Scanlan, as you've said, is interesting because in some ways the panel is more precise about the tradition than he is. The issue of the non-existence of school boards at the founding, that's important, I think. It's important if one wants to see even if one likes the traditional method, it makes it a stronger tradition if you see evidence before, during, and after the founding that the practice is being engaged in.
Well, but of course, it all depends on how you're defining the practice. If you said, was there prayer at solemn official meetings Well, yes, there was, and the school board is a solemn official meeting. It's part of democratic self-governance. So, again, a lot of this comes down to, well, just how do we define this tradition, which leads to maybe one final thought for this podcast, which is, isn't this all sort of manipulable? I mean, you can say you believe in a tradition, and then you have very good arguments for how narrowly you define that tradition, which very good arguments will lead to totally different results in a particular case.
That is a criticism. It's a reasonable criticism of the method. But I don't think it's a very powerful criticism for a couple of reasons. The first is all methods are contestable, right? If we use a principled method or a rule-based approach, if we apply the Lemon test, for example, we're constantly fighting about the scope of the principle or the application of the rule. So it doesn't distinguish this particular method to say that, well, it can be manipulated in one way or another. That's just the nature of constitutional interpretation more broadly. That's one.
Okay.
The second is, at least when we're doing this, when we're talking about the nature of tradition, we're talking about something very, very concrete. We're not talking about applying equality or liberty, something that is sort of infinitely manipulable. We're talking about the identification of a particular practice and how narrowly or broadly that line or that category should be drawn. That's a little bit, that's better. It should make one feel better about the extent to which judges can sort of do whatever they want.
Well, that's a very cogent defense of tradition, just as I'd expect from the co-director of the Tradition Project. All right, well, let's leave it there for this podcast. Again, this has been Mark Movsesian, the director of the center, with my colleague Mark DiGirolami, the associate director. You can find past podcasts at our website, Law and Religion Forum. That's one word, lawandreligionforum.org. See you next time.